Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard, and I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down, real low. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Game over?
No way!
Because we got Game Genie!
We tell you when it's over.
With Game Genie, I decide how many lives I get.
I use it when I want to live forever.
Play to the end and win. Maybe I want to start on level 15.
No problemo!
It makes cool games like Street Fighter 2 more exciting.
Less frustrating!
With Game Genie, it ain't over. So we say it's over.
Excellent!
Game Genie for NES, Super NES, Sega Genesis, and Game Boy. Codes for many popular games, each sold separately.
Love it!
Hey everybody, what's going on? Welcome back to Play Retro. That's right, Play Retro. We're back. I'm your host, Scott Johnson, and I don't believe in genies or sharks.
Ah, and I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway, and I can't stop cheating my way to success. Enter code GLOOB.
GLOOB. You know, I'd forgotten Galoob was involved at all until you reminded me that Galoob was the maker of that, of the genie.
That's right.
Yeah.
They, yeah, those guys are, what a great name, and they no longer exist, is that right?
Galoob's around, aren't they?
Didn't Hasbro purchase them or something?
Did he get swallowed up by somebody? Hold on. Galoob.
I'm taking this talk, talking about sharks. They got ate up, maybe.
Here it
or
is.
Or maybe they just like downsized.
No, I found it. Galoob Toys, company headquartered in San Francisco, or South San Francisco. I can't read.
South San Francisco.
They're perhaps known for their micro machines as maybe their biggest thing.
And Pound Puppies.
Yeah, Pound Puppies. In 89, the micro machines accounted for 50% of their sales. Anyway, let's see what they do now.
Nice.
They are, founded in 57, defunct in 58.
Oh, defunct, man.
In England in 1958. That's weird.
Oh yeah,
and then,
they couldn't deal with it. They couldn't deal with it in the England.
Yep, you're right. Oh, and then 1998 as a toy company. So what are they now?
Yeah.
They September 98. Hasbro bought
them. They're just a name now. That's all they really ever had was. It's fun to say Galoob.
Galoob. It was fun to say.
Galoob.
$220 million. They were purchased by Hasbro, and the name began appearing on retail products in 2005. Hasbro has used the Galoob brand logo on its Titanium Series die-cast metal collectibles, including various items from Transformers, Star Wars, and Battlestar Galactica. So they still live on.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about a couple of companies today that still live on despite their meteoric? Yes.
Meteoric.
That's rise and fall.
That's right. When people say meteoric, they don't mean...
It's like a meteor, but meteors don't really live. It's more like a rocket.
Yeah, because why do they say rise? Meteors fall to the planet. They fall down. They don't go up. So I've never understood that. And then one time somebody said, no, they mean like mediocre. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's it. Because you're talking about like a rising to fame very quickly. Meteoric. You don't say, oh, it's a mediocre rise to fame. Nobody says that.
Maybe I've just never seen it written down and I'm saying it completely wrong. Maybe
who
it's
knows?
Like meaty.
Yeah.
Meaty rise.
Speaking of meaty,
fame.
Let me tell you about the meaty time I had last week. I went to Las Vegas, Nevada for the TMS meetup for the morning show.
Yeah, you did.
It was great. And a lot of people asked about you, just so you know.
Oh, hi, everybody.
Lots of fans of Brian Dunaway while I was there. Anyway, one of the nights, we set up a arcade tournament, like an arcade video game tournament.
Yes.
And at said tournament, I was thinking I'd be out in the first or second round just because I figured everybody would just kill me. That's just how I thought it was going to go.
Right. That makes sense. That's what I think, too. We don't consider ourselves like good gamers.
No. We're gamers, but we're not. We don't think we're good.
Gamers.
Yeah. We're good. Right. It turns out we're better than we think at the old stuff, because I ended up taking second place and almost first. I almost edged that whole contest out. Yeah. Felt pretty good about myself.
Leaderboard.
Yeah.
So, what were y'all playing?
Okay. So it was kind of random, not random, but we got to pick different games. So my first game was an elimination in, or I beat the other person in Joust. Okay. So I played my favorite arcade game.
That's episode one here. Of course you did.
Yep. And then Zoe back in the chat claiming she beat me in Joust. That was an exhibition game. Had nothing to do with the competition.
That didn't count.
It didn't count.
Look at her trying to stick her Game Genie memory in that.
It's a good point.
I beat you.
Yeah, she's well, whatever. I think you won that game, Zoe, no matter what. So you just didn't do it in the competition, which would have made you beat me.
Just didn't get it where the medal counts, right?
Yeah, it's where it counted. I was like a little side contest. It was like the Pro Bowl. Nobody gets hurt in the Pro Bowl, you know. Anyway, so we it was very nice seeing her. She's awesome. So we played that. And I won that game.
Y'all were in Vegas. Like, were y'all like in an arcade or something? Because I watched this through some of our community members. Monkey Bananas, I think, was doing some live.
Yeah, he streamed it all.
Stuff.
He was cool. And he walked around looking like Jason or Justin. Who was the Justin Chan guy? The guy that made Justin TV and Twitch? That guy.
Yeah. Looked like him, huh?
Yeah, walked around with like a camera on his shoulder, and he had like an arm-mounted phone control thing so he could do all his Twitch stuff there. It was great. It was freaking great.
Right. But anyway. You were at arcade, though, right? In Vegas. Where was this arcade?
So downtown, see if I can remember the name of it. I think it's just called the Player One Arcade. But it's basically arcade. So it's a barcade. It's a bar and an arcade with heavy emphasis on arcade. You can drink there a ton, but it's also mostly games. And they're all on free play all the time. However, this is an important distinction. All these old arcade machines, all of them on free play. They don't charge any quarters or tokens or anything. There's a $5 cover charge when you get in, and that's it. Never have to buy anything else or do anything else. And they have classic consoles on one side of the room, all up next to these tables, so you could play a Genesis version of Madden 98 while you're drinking or whatever. It was cool. You would have loved it. It was really, really cool.
Yes.
And it was in downtown area of Vegas, not the main strip, but down near where Old Vegas is, and that whole area is like kind of exploding right now. It's really cool. Anyway, it was rad. You could tell people who built this place and run this place are like us. They're just like super into it.
Yeah.
And they had everything you could ever think you'd want, with a couple of exceptions. And some of them, like any old arcade machine, some of them had button problems. One of them had a joystick out of whack. Oh. You're just going to have issues. So this happened to me a couple of times. I ended up losing in a hockey. Do you remember a top-down hockey game called, what was that called?
Just hockey? Atari hockey?
No, it's a little cocktail machine, and I cannot remember the name of this damn game.
I think
game.
I know which one you're talking about, because we kind of skimmed over that one, I believe, while we were doing our NHL 94.
We may have episode. Done a, yeah, we may have mentioned it. I can't remember.
Oh, what was it? It's something vague, I can't remember.
Hockey.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about,
it's
though.
Like hockey killers.
Lister, you just have to envision it's a top-down cocktail arcade machine.
Yes. And the game itself was also top down, so it just was like your head and then some shoulders and a stick, and that was how you play.
And you're looking down like this at it.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And it never would go left for me on the stick. So right, no problem. Forward, back, no problem. Anytime I had to go left, nope. And so
this is something I worry about when I go to those all you can eat arcades. I just feel like it's like, we don't have a guy. You get what you get. Move on to the next machine. You're not going to put it out of order on that? No, we're not.
There was a little bit of that going on. In fact, there was a Asteroids Deluxe machine that I was supposed to compete on. and that machine had a broken fire button, so it would fire intermittently.
Oh my god!
Just very
that
intermittently.
My heart.
So you mostly just dodged asteroids, and then tried to pound on that button, and it would barely. Once in a while, it would just squeak one out, like somebody trying to pee with a swollen prostate, which is like. a little bit, get out, you know, and you're like, man, I had to look at that. So I don't know. Some of those were like you'd get into the fight or into the challenge and go, oh, this stick's broken. Okay, yeah. This game doesn't count. Move to another one. We'd have to go find another one. So we did a bunch of that. And I'm trying to remember some of the other games I played.
That brings up a topic, though, yeah. Or at least it brings up something in my mind. I used to always feel so much anxiety when I would be at the arcade and I drop my quarter in, something doesn't work, and I'm the first one has to go report it, and you got to go, oh God, let me go see if I can find the attendant. And then you find them. Sometimes you get a good attendant. Someone comes right out and they get all the keys and stuff. And sometimes they know exactly what to do. And sometimes they got to dig around. And I always just stood around behind like going,
yeah,
hey man,
I got these quarters. I already put one in.
I already put one in. And you know, if it was a good attendant, they'd go, Close it up. They go, hey man, ting 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 ting.
Yeah, they'd flick your little deal there before you got in. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
yeah, that's how you're supposed to do it.
They walk away, and you're like, I won in life.
That's how my dad used to do it. They had a bunch of weird issues. The other thing about these machines, all of them were cranked up to their dip switches were set for hard. And so,
yeah, they want you off.
That's fine.
Because that machine.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not, it's not for making money. It's for, hey, these are all free play. And if this place is packed, we want you to get beat real quick and move so someone else can have a turn.
Yeah.
So these were all set to the highest possible difficulty settings. That being said, I played Miss Pac-Man against Kathy Hopkins, who is, I think, my second to the finals people I had to fight. We had two very different strategies. She was all about eating every ghost, no matter what. And my goal was to clear as many boards as I could. And there's value in both of those plans. However, I think I chose the poor decision because this thing was set so high on the dip switches. Your very first board in Miss Pac-Man was like turbo. Just like, and you're like, holy shit, what's going on? This should be like level 8 or 9, right? So anyway, I got used to it. Ended up beating her by one. Or no, for a while there, I had a lead of like 20,000 points. I was rocking her world. Right. But then she started catching up and eating every ghost. And, you know, as you know, every ghost you get, if you get the fourth one, you get 1,000 points.
Your numbers.
And she starts cranking up those numbers. She gets within striking distance, within 800 or 900 points. One final ghost eating challenge would do it. And she's turned them blue. She's on her way to eat them. Timer was one of those levels where they flash real soon and then turn back to normal ghosts. A ghost died, and I won by a measly freaking ghost chomp.
Oh, see, that's how it goes. Sometimes the Pac-Man goes in your favor. Sometimes the Pac-Man don't go in your favor. But I'm sad that I wasn't there, because if I had been there, we would have definitely have put on a Starcade-type performance on the old show. Remember the 80s show Starcade? That was so much fun.
It's so much fun.
It's
so stupid.
So
now.
Bad, though.
Have you looked at it lately? Go back and watch that if you haven't. It's bad. It's really bad.
It's bad. All the poor kids. So imagine a time before the internet, and imagine a time before everybody had TikTok and everything else. Everybody's gotten pretty savvy about being in front of a camera. Yeah. Back in the 80s, in Starcade, nobody had any experience being in front of a camera, and we all act like a bunch of dudes.
Yep.
Right? We're walking around, a bunch of galoobs trying to explain why arcade games mean something to us. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
We didn't know what to say. It was fantastic.
We didn't know this thing, this method of extracting our cash. We thought it was something more than that. And I still think that, but
there's Tron.
Yeah. Look at Tron. There's Bubble Bobble. Got a little Journey. Yeah. Remember the Journey video game? Oh man.
Yes. The host was bad too, by the way. He was really creepy.
Let's see what he sounds like. I want to hear this guy talk. Hold on.
Here we go. He's no Mark Summers.
No, he's chasing those boys. I'm going to skip ahead.
I'll pick Star Trek, please.
Star Trek, good game. Okay, and we'll ask our resident Trekkie to tell us about that.
There's a resident
Trekkie.
Welcome
aboard, Captain. Command the Starship Enterprise on a Star Trek adventure. Your mission is to...
Oh my gosh, can we just sit and watch these over again? Can we just do that?
Yes, they're so terrible, but they're also so much fun.
Oh, man.
Where is it? Like, you can watch all these episodes somewhere. I forget where I
YouTube's got them all.
Last YouTube or archive.org, or maybe I was watching a feed on Twitch. I don't know, but man, Twitch, if you never checked out Starcade, it's amazing.
Twitch Twitch Marathon did a lot not too long ago, and if you want, I'm looking at it right now. The it looks like YouTube's got everything, so you can get it there.
Yeah, there you go.
I might have to go watch that.
You will not be riveted, but you will be lulled to sleep, possibly, with the comfort of old entertainment.
Yeah, you'll be. That's a way of putting it.
Right. That's one way to put it.
Yeah.
But Starcade. Yeah. It was a thing, and we need to do something about it.
Yeah,
right?
I agree. I think that if I don't know what
isn't
it would be.
Isn't tech TV coming back? Isn't that a thing during this time of our that
tech
we're
TV,
doing stuff?
No, tech TV. Well, tech TV is like early aughts, wasn't it? Like
yes, early aughts.
Yeah, and this thing was like 90 something.
80 something, I thought.
Oh, 80 maybe. I think it goes 80s. As far as
G4 is back, because that reason why I was talking about it is I was remembering Cheat on was it G4 or Tech TV? I guess it doesn't matter at all. Kind of like all end up being.
Oh, you know what's great though? Right? One of the games they played here was Zor, which my dad built Zor. That was a game we built.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, yeah.
He used to build Zor machines.
Yeah. So if y'all want to see what Zor was,
but your dad took. Your dad took pride in his machines.
He took pride in his machines. Yeah, we built.
He wouldn't
Zor
allow
machines.
A loose stick.
Starcade episode 3. Or no, episode. Wait, episode 34. Oh my gosh, there's tons of these.
34. Oh, there's so many of them. Right. I went, like I said, I watched it for like a good day and a half one week. I forget what I was doing. Nothing apparently.
I'm into
nothing
it.
Nothing with my life.
I'm into it because I had a combination of like trivia. Like a regular game show, and then they would actually have to go compete on the games themselves.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And I'm telling you, man, the interviews are the most painful thing you've ever watched in your life.
These poor kids. These kids, man. These kids are just like, well, they're us now. They're these, you know, these guys are all 40s and 50s now.
Yeah, yeah.
And they probably look back on this and just go, oh, shit, look at me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But you know what? It's time. Let's bring it back. All right. Hey, Brian, tell me about you went to Ohio. I've only been to Columbus, but I really like that that state. And you picked up a Sega Saturn, and I want to kick you in the shins for it because I love my Saturn and I miss it. So how'd it go?
Yeah, I picked up. Yeah, so I went to Ohio. That's my daughter. She was playing in the high school percussion indoor. And so they went up there and did that. But while she was doing that, I was like, I'm going to sleep out to the Game Swap. It was a retro game store up there. I don't have any Game Swap. I don't have any like cool stores where I live at. No retro stores. But Ohio had several of them. I stopped at one. The first one I stopped at was called Game Swap. And then I stopped at a second one. And that experience was not nearly as good as my first experience with Game Swap.
Mm.
When I went into Game Swap, I felt like there were gamers there. They were the manager or owner, whoever he is, the guy that I dealt with, was an old Blockbuster employee, and he had, you know, he regaled us with stories of how when he left Blockbuster, he had, you know, he purchased several things like the rental equipment that you used to could get and that kind of thing. And you could tell that a gamer owned this store. And that pleased me greatly. And I ended up buying the Sega Saturn from there and several other games. Sonic 1, 2, NBA Jam. Stuber stoked about that one.
Yeah, the Jam, the Sega Saturn version of Jam was great because it had really good sound on it. It was fantastic.
Actually, I bought those for the Genesis. He actually didn't pick up any of the Saturn games because he didn't have any good Saturn games that I really wanted.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, the only ones that are any good are as follows. Bomberman.
And we played that one on here.
We did.
Now, I'm looking at trying to get some Saturn games. In the meantime, this is what kind of...
Oh, wait. Before you go on, tell people what you paid for. What does a Saturn go for these days? You go find a used Saturn. What do you pay?
This guy lovingly cared for this thing, and it was $150 for the console and a controller, power, video cable, all that good stuff. That's about what you're going to pay on eBay plus shipping. Most times, but considering that the guy actually warranted it and he said I could send it back within so many days, if it broke, I could mail it back to him. So that was kind of cool. Plus I could see it. I could visually see that, oh, this is good. Flipped it over. Said, okay, that's good. So not a great
black
deal.
Black one or the gray one? There's a silver one and a black one. Which one did you get?
Right. I got the black one.
Oh, good. That's the only one to get.
Yeah, this is one I like. Now, if you've never seen a Sega Saturn, here it is right here, and I'll describe it on stream here. It's a disc-based system.
Yeah. Takes Genesis cartridges, though, by the way.
Yeah, and it'll take these carts back here. Can you actually play the Genesis games back here? I thought that was always something they wanted to do, but they never did. You mostly put like memory expansions, because we're going to talk about this today too. This takes a Pro Action Replay memory card that you can put here, so you can expand your memory, which will allow you to soft mod this thing so that you can play burnt disc, which is fantastic because, if you know, CDs don't survive as long as cartridges.
No.
So they're getting more and more scarce, and eventually this laser may die and everything else. And there's actually a laser replacement that you can get and put a little solid state drive in there eventually. But
sure.
For now, I'm just trying to get this thing modified so that I can burn my own disc. I'm going to try to pick up at least a few of the fighting games. This thing was really good at the fighting games.
2D games in particular. They were very good on there. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's I'm pretty excited about this Sega Saturn Find.
What I was going to say about that back cartridge, cartridge slot, I might be thinking of my CDX, which always reminds me of that being in the rear because I had a Genesis slot in the rear. That's probably what I'm thinking of.
Right. I think you may be right. And
is this the sound it makes? I'm going to play some sound. You tell me if this is what the sound makes when it starts up, because it's important here. Is that your startup?
That I don't know. I haven't started it up yet.
Oh.
I haven't started it up yet. I don't have no games. I don't got nothing to put it on. I just plugged it in. We plugged in and showed me when I was at the thing, but since I've gotten it home, I haven't plugged it in and done anything. He had a few discs, but they were all like, you know, they were all like 100 or more. It was fair prices for what you would expect.
Yeah.
But all the games he had were really expensive or games I didn't really want for a price I didn't really want. So I said, well, let me see if there's another retro store in here. And sure enough, there was another retro store up in Ohio that I went to.
Yeah.
This one was like the opposite of the experience I had with my gamer friend at GameSwap. Instead, this guy, I walked the door, didn't talk to me, didn't look up. I was walking through his place. He had stuff everywhere. Mm. He had tons of games and just all kinds of way more stuff than the first store.
Mm.
He had way more stuff. But he was on the phone the entire time I was there, talking to his buddies, talking about all the great things that he was purchasing and how much he was selling them for. And he picked up this one game and it was making him $500,000. And everything he talked about the entire time, I was like, this guy doesn't even like gaming. Mm. This guy wants to make money off nostalgia. Mm. And I'm like, I just felt dirty and I had to leave. Mm. I mean, I'm fine. It's fine. If you want to do it that way, if that's what pleases you,
sure.
That's fine.
Sure.
But I wanted to go where the gamers were.
Yeah.
I don't mind paying the price. I don't mind paying the fair price.
Yeah.
I didn't want to give that guy any money. I just didn't want, because all it was him was just money.
I hate to say this because I don't like to bring up controversial stuff on the show, but you basically just perfectly encapsulated my problem with the NFT world, because I don't have a problem with valuing art or art in itself or any of that. I like to be around people who appreciate art for all the reasons that I think you should appreciate art. I don't want to be around a bunch of people who just see it as a commodity with a price on it. I hate that.
Yeah.
So
because we love those things.
Yeah. To me,
we
you just described art. That was like a perfect analogy. I've been having a hard time coming up with one. You may have just provided one. Nice job. Well done.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. But like I said, other game stores I'm not going to name because it's not, you know, it's fine that people want to make money off things. Capitalism, yay. It just made me feel dirty. If he had just stayed off the phone the whole time, I would have never known.
Yeah.
And I would have just went and bought my stuff and left. But I was like, I ain't buying nothing here because it still feels gross. I felt like I had to take a shower. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, so there you go. Well, I hope this thing ends up being a good investment for you. I loved the Saturn despite its problems. There was a lot to like about it. I mean, hell, it was the last time my wife really played any kind of versus with me in any game. And it was for Bust a Move.
Bust a Move. That's a great game. That's what I should get.
It was Bust a Move something. Anyway, it was like the best version of that game. And it was basically Bubble Bob or Bubble. What the hell is that called in Japan? It's a different name. Anyway, we played that and she, man, if there was ever a time my wife would leave me, it was when we were playing that game. Because she would get so pissed. when I would beat her in that. So I have a lot of fond memories of that time.
And it's sad, but, you know, all these disc-based systems are, they're very much more problematic than your cart-based systems. And I was hesitant to even buy this Sega Saturn. And I did kind of, I kind of glossed over what I really did. I went to that first store and I left, but I wouldn't shut up about the Sega Saturn. Mm. And so my significant other said, go back and get it.
Yeah.
And I was like, nah. And then I started talking about it again. She said, go back. I'm buying it for you. Shut up. So yeah. She gave me some shut up money.
Shut up. That's money. That's how you play that game. Oh, I like that money. Shut up money. Mm-hmm. My favorite money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wasn't going to get it, but she said, if you get it, will you shut up? I was like, mm-hmm.
I sure will. The whole rest of the way home, you drove, right? So you're just the whole rest of the way home, Brian, shut the hell
up.
Yeah,
yeah. I didn't mention a thing one more time after that, other than thank you very much. I'm so excited. I can't wait. I never could. I could never afford a Sega Saturn at that time, and I really wanted one, and it just never happened. And so this is literally fulfilling a lifelong dream of getting to play the Sega Saturn.
That's
and
right.
That's it, and I'm done.
The second
said,
to last, the second to last commercial console product from Sega. Oh,
yes,
that's a bummer. All right. Well, on that note, let's move ahead and do this right here.
Shall we play a game?
All right, you guys, line up. It's time for you cheaters to get a moment in the spotlight. Okay.
Yeah, cheater,
all you pumpkin eaters out there, get ready. We're about to talk about your favorite shit. I'm going to play another one of these bad commercials just to get us in the mood.
There's almost every Game Genie commercial is bad.
They're all bad. Now, this one I like because they went full Bill and Ted. Okay, so here's this.
Yo, video game dudes, talk to me. Excellent! This is Game Genie. Frunkaloo. The awesome video game enhancer for your Nintendo Entertainment System.
Okay, so that's them. You know, going
Bill and Ted it up. How they didn't get sued for that and continued to use the excellent.
They
used
it a
Genie.
Ton.
I'll never know.
Yeah, they totally did, and they kind of dressed like them and did this whole thing. And all these commercials feature different, you know, quote unquote teenagers being all Bill and Teddy. But that one in particular was very egregious. Then they got kind of some of them were short and sweet, like this Genesis one. Listen to this.
Something incredible is happening that will give Sega Genesis even more power. Game Genie now works with your Sega Genesis system in most games, like Sonic the Hedgehog, Kid Chameleon, Toe Jam, and Earl. Game Genie for Sega Genesis.
Excellent.
But they still did the excellent.
They still did the excellent thing. I was about to say, that is so much better. And then they had to end it with,
Excellent.
Did they just secretly want to name it the Game Dude or something? Because, I mean, they were not leaning into the Galoob Game Genie brand.
No, it was all about just, hey, it's the 90s. Things are radical, man. Let's do this. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you have a genie in your Game Genie commercial and, you know, I'm here to grant you. I mean, you could get a wrestler. This was the time of big time wrestling.
Yeah,
I mean,
you could have had Ric Flair going, oh, you got three wishes, brother.
Yeah.
These commercials write themselves, but for whatever reason, they decided it was all about slacker dude culture, and that's what they
did. I guess that was specifically, I could definitely see it aimed at the Genesis dudes, but I really don't think that played exactly the same to the NES people. I don't feel like NES gamers were bro dudes, really. That was more of Sega's thing, right?
I don't know. Like the 90s, early 90s commercials, like that old when we did our Metroid episode, we have that Metroid, Super Metroid commercial for the SNES version of that. And they were definitely dipping into like blast processing territory. It was real. I think there was a real, I don't know if you could point to Sega and say, you're the reason for this shift in marketing. Maybe they are. Right. But whether they are or aren't, there was definitely a shift into more, instead of just going, this game is cool and here are the reasons they are cool. And instead it became, whoa, radical. And then everyone started doing it. Yeah. But then Sega got weird toward the end of the 90s where they started like, you know, you'd pick up a dead rat and use it to do something. And then a frog would talk and, you know what I mean? Like it got really surrealistic and like drug induced. Toward the
we
end.
We really did. We really got really, we were a little lost in the 90s, but that's fine. That was just, it was going through a phase. We were going through a phase, especially with gaming. So, but Game Genie came along like what, like early 90s? It was a, and it was primarily originally kind of really focused on the NES, which was starting to get a little bit older, right? I mean, you'd play your NES games, but you, like the commercials say, you got to get your games out of the closet.
It was like
now
putting,
we've got,
it was like putting your cartridges in traction though to make it work with that slot. It was like a big nightmare.
Yeah, the Game Genie for the NES and the Game Boy, because as we know, Nintendo is not prone to play well with others, and so they didn't make it easy for the Game Genie, Gloob, or you know, Codemasters, however you want to go back to the beginning, Codemasters or Comerica, didn't want to make it easy for none of those guys, and so they kind of always made that stuff difficult on purpose, and it's kind of scary too with the Game Genie for the NES. I don't know. Did you have one?
I did not have one. No, never dipped my toe into the cheater's sphere. Never did it.
I had a friend who had one, and I remember thinking, no, because when you put it in there, because it was, I was like, no, man, this is going to break your equipment. I'm an old school lover of the, you know, the technology. And so you stuck your adapter in there, your Game Genie adapter into your NES, your front loader.
Yeah.
You got a flippy little flip up. And you know, when you put a game in there, a regular cart, you'd push it down and it would lock into the pins. That's cool. Not with the Game Genie. You just stuck it in there, kind of halfway sticking out, and you put the cart on the end of it. And ooh, that was dirty. I didn't care for that at all.
I didn't like that either. It felt really, really hackery, which maybe was the point. I don't know that they were trying to, you know, market on or whatever. But things got easier with the Genesis and SNES because you had these, you know, backload, you know, plug it into the top of the thing. You had a little more room there to kind of fiddle and create stuff. So there's one right there. Brian's got in his hands the Game Genie for the Genesis. Have you tried it? Have you messed with it?
This is the Game Genie by Gloob, and you'll notice on the front of this cart there is a Sega Genesis label on there. That's because, unlike Nintendo, who sued Gloob in Comerica over their little adapter, Sega said, no, come on, we'll brand this thing, make some money off of it. Well, this is after the lawsuit, so hey, why not?
Sure.
What are they going to do? They know they see the writing. They see the writing and they say this is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And they did. And this fits into your cart, your Genesis. There's no bending. It's a good fit. It fits well. If you've never seen one of these pass-through devices, they're called cheat devices. We usually call them cheat devices, but their name is video game enhancer.
Yeah, enhancers, whatever.
And it kind of, it does enhance some stuff.
It does. Look, let's say, this is the use case, which I kind of agree with. You buy a game, I don't know, Castlevania, right?
Right.
You stick it
hard
into
as hell.
Sure, it's hard. You put it in the machine and you play real hard and you finish that game and you did it without any help. It was great. You really appreciated the fact that you did it. Well done. You got your money's worth. Well, what if you got a little more money's worth if you had a Game Genie and then you put that in between there? And now, even though you've already beat it, now you can just go screw off. Do some second runs with some unlimited lives or do some, you know, weird stuff with the turbo fire or whatever. Like you can go, you can go to new heights with the thing. I think that's fine. Nothing wrong with that.
I think it's brilliant. And I think it probably helped at least a few people keep out their NES a little bit longer because if you got Castlevania, we're talking about an era when there weren't saves necessarily, and you might be using codes or you might be using batteries that are on the carts themselves. And so the fact that you could cheat with these Game Genie pass-through devices, and we'll kind of get into how these actually work very shortly, but you could do stuff like you could just start at any level. So if you're playing Castlevania and you don't want to have to play through the whole game again, but you never beat like whatever, and for reasons you didn't have passwords or battery saves or whatever, you could just pop in your Game Genie. Oh, I don't know if you even pop it in. You jam it in there and bend your pins. And then you could do it.
I think you got more out of your $30 than the initial $30 if you had this thing on the back end. Here's the thing about this device and devices like it, which we'll talk about in a sec. They're kind of ingenious in a way. Like today you hear about ROM hacking and ROM hacks and that sort of stuff.
Yes.
Super common. People do it all the time. Well, really, that's what this was. But the software to hack the ROMs was on the in-between device. And that in-between device would be programmed to handle certain games. That's also a problem because as far as I know, there was no like way to update these things. So you could come out with like 15 new games and there weren't codes for them yet. Not necessarily. Some games did, some games didn't. But
so let's backpedal just a little bit here.
Yeah.
We have the Game Genie, which I'm holding up now. If you haven't seen it, it looks like just one of the old EA sports game carts. It's about that size. You're familiar with the Sega Genesis. Yeah. In addition to getting a Game Genie, you would also get this nice little book. It's not real thick, but they would usually have, you know, maybe 100 or more game codes that you could use for different games.
Sure.
Not game codes. More than 100 games worth of different code you could use for each one. Now, when you did this, you could also subscribe in the back of the book for, I think it was quarterly updates. So you'll see that number 2 there.
Yeah.
Order form 2. If I sent this off to the Galoobs, they would send me an update for more codes for games as they come out.
Yeah.
So you could also program your own games codes as well. And the Game Genie used eight digit codes. Yeah, right. But I love this book, man. I had to get the book. You can find these Genesis Game Genies on eBay for maybe like $40. But I had to have one with the game codes because I just wanted to see, because there's some things in here that describe, like, let's take a look real quick. Each one of these game code sections would have stuff like extra lives, you know, and level selects and different cheats for each of the particular games. But they would also describe in like a little paragraph, you know, about the game and how it works. Like, here's the Pac-Mania game paragraph real quick. Let's see. The graphics on this 16-bit version blew away anything you've seen in earlier Pac-Man games. Beware the athletic jumping monster, the light green ghost that will jump with you kill, and you will try to jump over him. PACM code 17 gives you plenty of time to chomp all the ghosts. If you had had this at the
if I'd had it in Vegas, I would have won sooner. Vegas, is what you're saying? Yeah,
you could have won. You could have totally won.
Well, the game. Yeah, so here's the problem. The game I lost in the end was Super Street Fighter 3, which would have never been on a game genie pass through ever. But yeah. Not Street Fighter 3.
It wouldn't apply to arcade games, but certainly I. Almost every game
Alpha 3, then,
that exists, mm-hmm. almost every game that exists in the 16-bit era that these Game Genies were active on, most of them were able to, you know, be modified in some way or another by a Game Genie. There was a few exceptions, like later in the life, like when the Super Nintendo came out, they had some, the way the memory was saved where they put the memory at, it got a little more complicated, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what we're talking about, ROMs. Well,
plus, Nintendo was not down with this. They didn't like this. They thought it was intrusive and bad, and just like you'd think they would think today about things like this.
Yeah.
And they sort of fought against that. They did not want that.
They sued. They sued Galoob and Comerica, the Canadian distributor of the Game Genie at the time. By the way, Codemaster, we know those guys, right?
Yeah.
We love the Codemasters. They're the ones who did these deals. Yeah, they sued.
They just got bought, by the way. EA owns them now, I think, Codemasters.
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah. But Nintendo, as was expected, Codemaster knew this well. Mm. They knew that Nintendo was going to sue. And sure enough, they sued Galoob. But what Nintendo didn't realize, or maybe they did, third largest toy company in America was Galoob.
Yeah.
They had some pockets, right?
At the time,
And so Nintendo came with their lame ass, you can't use this because it's derivative works. So you're breaking our copyrights because you're making derivative works.
Yeah.
And Galoob is like, nah, man, all we're doing is, you know, we're just allowing the users to like turn to the page of a book. Instead of having to start at the beginning of the book, they can flip to the end of the book or the third chapter or fourth chapter. And of course, Galoob won that case. And Nintendo had to pay delay fees about $15 million to Galoob because it took about a year for them to kind of work through that stuff. And so they delayed it for a minute in North America, but then we got it. We got the Game Genie. And Nintendo, your suit didn't work.
Yep, your suit didn't work. And just like
gamers
now,
win.
Yep, gamers always win. We'll always find a way. Okay. Gamers find a way. That's the rule.
Yeah, like I got order form too. Well, see that? Look at that guy. I think he has the gold one. I think the gold. No, he's got the same code book I have.
Yeah.
And there's the supplemental.
These
too.
Are the supplemental. Those actually code updates. Yeah. These are basically patches.
They were essentially patches. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Which at the time, I remember thinking that was rad. Like, whoa, it was. They're updates and they come in the mail. What's this about? It's such a weird thing. But.
Right. You bought the Game Genie and they kept sending you stuff. And you also find codes in magazines. So you get your gamer magazine and there would be Game Genie codes in there that hadn't been published yet. So, I mean, how cool is that?
It's pretty cool. I'm going to say it's cool. I believe it's cool.
And you know what else, Scott?
What else, Brian?
Now, these Game Genies were kind of simple compared to the ones we're going to talk about just in a minute, the Game Shark Pro. I mean, sorry, the Game Shark and the Pro Action Replay.
Right.
The Game Genie was very simple. You just you plug this into your machine. Well, first of all, you plug it into your cart, and then you plug that into your machine.
Yeah. How's that fit, by the way? Nice tight fit or what?
Oh, nice tight fit on the top of specifically the one I have, the Genesis one.
Yeah.
It looks like the, you know, the pins inside your Sega Genesis.
Sure.
You just plug it in there. Yeah. Like it's nice, snug fit.
Yeah.
So it doesn't rock back and forth. Plug that into your machine. And then when you turn on your machine, you'll get a code screen, which I find very satisfying. It's got rows of blank entries for you to enter your codes into. And they have like a little sword. It's like a little sword. It makes you feel like a pirate of some sort.
Oh.
And you choose you'll go through your little alphabet there and you type in your little code. And then you can fire up your system. If you turn on this little switch on the side of the Genesis Game Genie, it allows you to activate those codes. And then once you get inside the game, you can start cheating your butt off.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheat away. Don't hold back. Don't let yourself be stopped by, you know, things like common sense or your desire to have an honest life. Just cheat.
So,
go ahead.
So what it would do. Well, okay. So what you could do in addition to using the game codes that were in the book and in magazines and in supplements, you could just fiddle-faddle around until you found a cool cheat.
Let's say
you find a cool cheat. Suddenly you figure out, oh, I can make Sonic yellow. You can write in to Galoob and tell them this code.
Yeah, and they may publish
Would they credit
it.
You? No.
No.
But you might see it in the magazine.
Yeah, they may never credit you. That was the deal back then. Nobody credited. There was no, you know, creator content. Are you kidding? What are you crazy? That didn't happen.
What are you crazy? But anyway. I cheated my butt off with this Game Genie cart on Sonic specifically.
Here recently, like this week, right?
Yeah, yesterday, because I didn't get in until yesterday.
Because years ago, when this stuff was new, you and I were not, for whatever reason, you and I never had this or did this.
No, right? not back in the day, I didn't have one. My friend had one. These things were not cheap. I think the ones for the Genesis, when I had a Genesis, I think were somewhere around $70 to $80. And $70, $80 back then was like a lot now. So, I mean, it was, it was quite expensive. But what you're getting, though, is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because you can reactivate. Oh, so, you know, let's say you went and spent $40, $50 on, like, you know, each one of your carts. And you haven't been playing them in a year, and suddenly you're like, oh, I can go back. But if I get this Game Genie, one-time fee of like $50, $60, $80, I think is what I remember it being.
Yeah.
You can just get in there, and you can. So, I mean, it's you know, giving your games new life. If fake Bill and Ted have taught me anything, you got to be excellent to one another.
No, you do. Yeah. Fake Bill and Ted know everything, and I trust those guys. So let's talk about Game Shark for a second, because Game Shark was a whole different animal in terms of at least what they wanted to do.
Right.
So the Game Shark started, what year was that? That was...
It was towards the, about the time... Okay, so the Game Shark had actually been around for a while because Dattel, another UK company, Codemasters was as well. This is where all this stuff seems to start at. Mm-hmm. And they started kind of creeping in on the Game Genie market, right?
Yeah, and I'm trying to find, I can't find a date, but it's early on and mainly was kind of, well, it was tail end of the cart years.
Right. This was definitely 90s. This was mostly during the 90s. Yeah. Now, there was a lot of cheating going on before then, but it wasn't in the mainstream.
Yeah,
right?
Not the mainstream cheating. Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you had the Sony PlayStation 1 or an Xbox, the original Xbox, or a Nintendo console of some sort, you probably remember the Game Shark. The Game Shark was a thing. They even had a TV service or an online TV service. Do you remember this?
They had several services. Detail like to make... They wanted to do a whole bunch of stuff. They did peripherals. They did this whole online thing like you're talking about. I think it was the N64 adapter that allowed you to actually log in and use a keyboard. And you could look at a few things on the internet. It had a number you dialed into. You paid a monthly fee. GameShark was really trying to do everything. Game Genie was very specific, right? Game Genie was just ROM modifications, essentially, or pass-through, kind of like...
This thing was like that, but also, hey, do you want to sign up for a service? And if you do, it's a little like cable TV, except all it is codes and shit. It was a little more ambitious. I feel like it was doomed from the get-go, but it was in some ways very forward-thinking about the way we think of services now.
Right.
That was an interesting thing.
Right. To me, what Glue was doing with the Game Genie didn't really feel like they were trying to cheat as much as the Game Shark. The Game Shark is a lot. The Game Shark and the action replay devices, they did a lot more. They allowed you to create codes easier. They really weren't managing what people were doing. They were just giving those devices out there, and those devices could really do some nefarious hacker shit.
Big time. So, people still use that thing to do weird stuff on PCs and stuff. Like, the Game Shark is freaking weird.
Right. I mean, they were really getting into the deep stuff. I mean, like, even the PlayStation 1. PlayStation 1 came out, and it had a port on the back, and the Game Shark came along and said, we're going to stick something right in there. Boonk. Yeah. And so PlayStation then had to go, okay, guys.
Yeah.
No, we had to get rid of that port.
They had this thing where you could take, I remember this back then, with the Wipeout, the original Wipeout from Psygnosis, the racing game. And that game had amazing music tracks on it, really great techno and stuff for the time. And you could actually play a PlayStation disc in your car CD player.
Yes.
No problem. It just did it. Just don't play track one because that was data and it was really loud and would like wreck your speakers. But the rest of the tracks on that disc would just play like music. I knew friends who were taking Game Shark, PlayStation 1 Game Sharks, and had figured out a way to, I don't know how they did it, but they were pulling tracks off. Now, we think of this now and kind of laugh because everybody can burn whatever. But at the time, that was not even heard of, and it seemed impossible. They were pulling those music tracks out of that thing and then sharing it with their friends via other discs or whatever. And Sony was like, no, we can't be having that. Can't be doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
See, if the industry at large had said, okay, Glue's figured out a way, and they're for the most part playing nice with us, right? They've made relationships with Sega. There's rumors they tried to make relationships with Nintendo, and of course Nintendo said, get lost, we're gonna sue you now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then there's the Game Shark and they're like, no man, we'll just do whatever we want to do. And we'll, if we want to give the tools to the people to steal and rip and take and do whatever they want, we're going to do it.
Yep.
And so they did.
And they did.
And, And like I said, Galoob had a really big, marketing department. They were the number three toys seller.
So who's that behind? Hasbro and Mattel were the other two?
Hasbro and Mattel were the top two.
Okay.
And then Galoob was right behind that. And so, you know, they had the corporate attitude. They didn't want to get in any lawsuits or anything. They just wanted to sell their product and move along now. And so the industry should have just said because they had the advertising. Because unless you were in the know or in the video game stores or had friends who were doing all this stuff, the Game Shark and the Pro Action Replay, not as much in your face.
No.
They're not a lot of marketing. You was at the store and you'd see this on the shelf and you'd get it. As a matter of fact, I remember all that confusion back in the day for me because I was like, what is a Game Shark?
Yeah, I remember that too.
Some kind of Yeah, it's like, is that some kind of memory something? Because it looks like just like a little memory card.
I thought it was, when I first saw Game Shark, I thought it was a cartridge full of games. That's what I thought they were. And they weren't, obviously. But that was my first impression. It's like, oh, are they selling like a combo pack, three or four games on a thing? And I'm like, oh, no, this is like the freaking Game Genie. It's the same deal.
Did it feel dirty to you? Like, I felt like, I remember the feeling I had of the Game Shark back in the day. I felt like, I don't think I want to void my warranty. I don't know what this thing does. Yeah.
By the way, that 1996, the Game Shark won the Electronic Gaming Monthly, EGM's, Best Peripheral of 1996, right behind the Sega Saturn analog controller, the big old pizza plate thing. Yeah, remember that thing? Woo, boy.
Yeah, the Sega Saturn analog controller is pretty sweet.
It's
man.
A beast, it's, dude. It's such a beast. It's pretty sweet. They were always chasing the controller dream. Those poor guys. Like, I always think of it, this is a whole separate issue and not tied to Game Genies or Sharks or anything.
Well, it kind of is.
It kind of is, but back then, you were always watching Sega have a good time, but then a competitor would say, oh, yeah, well, what if we had four face buttons and shoulder buttons and analog, or no, shoulder buttons? And you're like, oh, shit, okay, we're going to do a six-button controller. It doesn't come with the Genesis, but hot damn, you're going to want to buy these extra, everybody. Okay, cool, now we're up to par. Wait, they've got a what? An analog stick? What the hell is that? Shit, we've already made all these these Saturns with these six-button controllers we thought were so awesome, and now they're talking about analog sticks? What the hell is that? So they got to make a big pizza controller-looking thing with an analog stick on it that nobody buys because it doesn't come with the damn box. Like, they were always stuck in this funny little space of, got to keep up, you know?
Yeah, it was the whole industry was kind of, like, out of place during that time, and the only people that had their heads about them was Sony, and they just walked with their PlayStation.
They had to play catch up with the N64 controller wise because that thing launched with no analog sticks, just D-pad and four face buttons, and then they doubled up on your shoulder buttons. But that was really the only innovation there. Then the N64 comes out, and then I remember when that first DualShock came out, again separate peripheral for PS1s. You had to buy it separately, and I remember going, man, these are awesome, but no one's buying them, so. Because you don't ever have one-to-one purchases. And as a result, the game support for that DualShock was abysmal. It was terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
So
there's nothing worse than buying a peripheral like that and then finding out there's only going to be two games.
I hate it, dude.
Sony PlayStation Move.
Freaking hate it. Yeah, the Move is a good example. I mean, everybody's done this, right? Microsoft's stupid Kinect, all that stuff.
You see, you hate the Kinect, but I really felt like Microsoft really wanted to put 100% behind the Kinect. They really were trying.
They wanted to.
I didn't feel like Sony with their Move thing was just like, hey, look, we got some balls and then a couple of sticks. Hey! And it's like, what games you got? None. We don't care. You bought the peripheral.
Yeah, but to me, that was everyone rushing to go, well, shoot, Nintendo's cleaning up. We need to have motion control. And so they scrambled to have motion control solutions that were both a little half-baked. And when they don't come one-to-one with the machine you're buying, no one buys them enough. It's rare.
Look.
Okay, here's the example where it did work for them was Sony's PlayStation VR for the PS4. Legitimately a successful peripheral that sold like crazy and did really well.
Right.
It wasn't one-to-one, but it was really good. So maybe we're finally breaking through that because PC players are used to this. They're like, well, I got this Razer mouse this week, and week before that I bought a new video card. And, we're used to this. But when it comes to consoles, nobody ever does. No one ever goes, oh, well, you should have packed it in when it was new. It drives me crazy. Anyway.
It does. Yeah. But you know what? None of those controllers are the NES Advantage or the NES Max.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Now.
Neither one of those are those.
Tell me.
Go ahead.
Keep going.
I was going to say, we also included, we just piggybacked this one on, just a little extra flavor to our cheat week here on Play Retro. We wanted to talk about the Turbo Button because we really obviously want to talk about peripherals, and we're going to get to it in an episode soon. But the Turbo Buttons is kind of a cheat, right?
It's
That's
a cheat.
Kind of, yeah, cheat. Turbo mode.
Mm-hmm.
You got
a lot of games that are emulator, or a lot of emulators, I should say, have an option to turn one of your many controller buttons that aren't being used for older games into a turbo button.
Right.
And yeah, so that's probably not that unusual for people today. But in the day, the way you would do it is you'd go buy like a third party controller. They all sucked. They were never good.
They all sucked.
Let's say it was Mad Cats or somebody, and there was always a way to flip on turbo, which meant if you were playing a shooter, top down shooter shmup game, instead of whacking on A constantly as fast as you could, you just hold down A and it would rapid fire.
Yeah. It cycles through. I read a little about this because I was trying to remember. I was like, oh, I remember always having controllers. Usually it was the cheap controllers. Usually it was like, hey, I got a GameStop branded controller and it's got a turbo mode. And it always, I turn on, I'm like, what does this do? It's making my gaming worse. Turn it off. And so I was kind of curious. And so like some of the first things were like for the NES. And from what I understood, each second has like, for each 60 seconds, no, I'm sorry. For each second, the NES pulls the controllers and the button looking to see if you pressed it.
Yeah.
60 times a second.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So if you hit the turbo button.
It's even more now, by the way.
Yeah. If you hit the turbo button, I think it could, if a controller was well, you know, well tuned with the turbo mode, you know, it could do something like, you know, 30 presses in a second or something. Yeah. So, I mean, and so it would almost essentially break the game or make the game act goofy.
Oh,
or
it got glitchy.
Humanly possible.
Yeah, it got glitchy. It got weird, especially NES games. Yeah. They would get, they'd be slow down, other issues. Yeah. So it was not advisable necessarily to always be using that. But they were there.
I want to do a deep dive in the turbo button eventually. Probably get to the peripheral stuff. But yeah, like I said, I was doing my initial kind of look and I was like, oh, okay, so that's how that works. And then, of course, systems later on, they didn't pull quite as often because they guess they realized, yeah, we don't need to pull 60 times a second. No. So it doesn't break as often. But you could do, like you said, you can, if you don't have a controller with the turbo and you want to try it out, you can always use emulation. There's
Math My Fanway in the chat says the NES Advantage. Do you remember this thing?
Yes, that was the one I was talking about earlier. It was the Advantage and then it was the NES Max.
He says the Advantage had adjustable turbo. I remember that. There'd be like ones with like five or six settings for turbo, and that was to kind of get around some of what Brian's talking about.
Yeah, there's also, I remember reading something about slowing down the games. I've always wondered how that happened because you could, you know, there's a way for the game to actually move slow. And if I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, playretroshow@gmail.com. But what I read initially was that it's basically like cycling on the select or start button. Like you're basically putting the game in pause, like really in rapid succession. Mm. And so you don't see like the little menu pop or whatever, but it's literally like staggering the frames. So it goes a lot slower. Yeah. I've never done that. I've never seen it go slow. Mm. You ever done slow mode in any of those things?
I have some vague memory of that, but I don't remember how I did it or how it worked. But I do remember it.
Right.
I remember, by the way, not to be confused with the turbo button that was often on PCs in this era.
That's hard.
A whole different thing.
Yeah.
Whole different thing.
Don't, if you Google turbo button, you're probably going to get most of the PC stuff.
Yeah.
We say turbo button because usually there's a dedicated button to it. Usually it's turbo mode is what you're looking for if you're Googling it.
Yeah. And they were, again, these controllers are kind of garbage otherwise. Like they weren't well made. I felt like they were really janky. I don't remember good. This is funny. I've been around the video game business a long time, and I'm telling you right now, the third-party controller world has been abysmal until recently. In the last 10 years, we're finally,
What do you think about the Power A controllers? The Power A, is that what they're called?
Remind me. I don't know what those are. Power A.
I think is they mostly sell in Walmart, but I've seen other places too. I think it's Power A. Don't freak out.
Oh, there they are
up now.
Advanced wire.
I've had good success with this third party controller, especially with the plugged in stuff. It's not bad. I don't know what the longevity is because I haven't used one of them a lot. You know, there's a lot to be said when you're talking about playing fighting games. That's going to be a lot more brutal on these controllers. Any type of melee is going to be, you know, it's going to be a lot more brutal on these controllers. I've mostly played, you know, like RPGs and it's more slow stuff. It's like I'm pressing the button now. So I'm looking at
the Power A controllers and they're cheap too. $29, $30.
Yeah. Cheap. They sell them at Walmart. They, you know, the ones I've had have been fine. I've had some that were like, I don't know if they're Nintendo branded, but they're Nintendo colored.
Nintendo colored.
I guess that's as far as they could get away with it, right?
Well, they've got a Switch controller. They've got Xbox controllers. They have a Pro controller for the Switch replacement that looks just like Pro controllers. In fact, one of them has Animal Crossing shit on it, so they must have some deal.
Oh, maybe they do have some kind of with tie-in with their... And maybe we're probably going to find out it's probably made of the same plant or something with just lower, cheaper materials or something like that.
You know what it could be? Well, it also could be, you know, they don't respect copyright over in China the way we do.
Right.
Or try
but
to.
You wouldn't think of being able to sell it in America at Walmart. But, you know, meh.
I don't know. Maybe I can't tell. These but these seem to be okay. Pretty beefy controllers. Yeah.
Yeah. I got good ratings.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I haven't had any problems. Like I said, I also haven't beat one up either.
Yeah, that's a good
point. It's mostly like, hey, you over here playing with me? Okay, I bought a second controller. Here's your Power A. I'm taking the good one. I mean, good luck.
Just in the sponsored list of kind of expanded list that Amazon has here, there are 157 pages.
Nice.
Of third party controllers. And so I don't know if it's just a combination of, you know, now we're just an embarrassment of riches and everybody's got a million versions of everything or what, but at some point they got
these things probably now.
Oh yeah. But they just got better.
These things probably cost 50 cents to make, right?
Yeah. Who knows? But they got so much better. Than they used to be. And nowadays I have no problem recommending certain.
Yeah. I wouldn't buy third party controllers back in the day, except for Mad Catz.
Yeah.
That was the only third party I would ever even consider back in the day.
Even then they were, sometimes they were janky.
They did have issues, but they were usually could find out about those issues pretty quickly. And it was usually with just specific models and there was usually very specific fixes for them. So I felt at least pretty comfortable with Mad Catz, and they had a pretty decent warranty that, you know, even if you made a mistake, you could usually figure it out.
Now, let me ask you this. I remember this story floating around, more of what I thought was kind of a rumor back in the day. There was a cheat, for example, for Mortal Kombat that was ABACABB, and it served as the game's blood and gore toggle. You could turn it on or off there.
Yes.
That was famous. But I heard there was some connection with that to Phil Collins, of all people, former Genesis drummer Phil Collins. Can you explain what that is? What's the story?
Abacab.
There?
You remember the Abacab song?
Yeah, the Abacab. It's not really based on that, is it, or is it?
That's what I've heard. They said, and this is in my research that I went along, there was an article on Engadget, and they had talked about, they had done some interviews, and sure enough, it turns out that programmers and developers are just like us, and they like to give nods to things they love, especially considering that the nod they were giving was to the band Genesis.
Sure.
You remember those? Phil Collins fronted a British rock band.
Yeah. Now, had it been the other way would have been weird, right? If Phil Collins would have said, I'm naming this song after this cool code for getting the blood into Mortal Kombat. Like, that would have been weird. But having it go this direction, I get it.
Yeah, I like that Phil Collins is lets me toggle on and off gore, just like in the song.
Yeah,
he has. Yeah,
that's what they do.
I can feel it come. You know, about turning the violence on and off.
Who
remember the rumors on that?
I do remember that. Yeah, I totally remember that.
Yeah.
So
what was it? Somebody had raped his sister, and he saw the guy, and he was on the beach, and a game shark was eating him. I can't remember something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, there was a game shark. He ate everybody. Game Shark tornadoes, everybody. let's talk about Interact for a second. They marketed the action replay device, but it wasn't their thing, right? Somebody else made this, and then they were like, hey, we're going to do this or whatever.
Right. Interact's a weird thing.
They are weird.
It was started by a 23-year-old in 1991.
Yeah.
His name is Todd Hayes. He was working in He was working in some part of the game industry, and then he got involved in import export.
Like George Costanza on Seinfeld. Yep.
Exactly. Import export kind of meaning that he buys products from other countries and they may rebrand them, and he also ships them out and stuff. So basically just fulfilling regional needs for products and whatever's boring stuff. Interact was set up basically for that. Mm-hmm. And so they were the Game Shark. Interact was the Game Shark seller in America.
Mm-hmm.
And that went on for a while, sold out to who was it? Was it Mac? I think eventually Mad Catz purchased Interact.
They bought Action. Is that true? Hold on. Crazy thing is they were making these things like all the way up through the DSi era of consoles. They were still doing these.
Yes. They were. Daytel, yeah. Who does all the pro action replay and is something that I got to get. That's what I was telling you about earlier. I need that pro action replay for my Sega Saturn. It's a, like I said, it's going to allow me to soft mod that thing.
Here you go. Let me give you this final. Yeah. So Nintendo 3DS XL was the last one. They made one for that. And the seventh generation would have been the Wii. So the Wii in 2012. That's right. It. They haven't done anything since then, which is kind of a bummer.
I don't think they. Yeah, they didn't do anything since because they're not around anymore, right?
That's yeah, kind of they're thing. Gone.
Or Daytel does some did some stuff all the way up till didn't they do? Oh, I remember it was Hyperkin. You guys who are retro gamers probably know about Hyperkin. They've actually made a USB device for the PS3 to allow you to do some cheating. Mm-hmm. I think that was the last cheater. We saw, and that is the way, and that's some old looking, that looks like some Commodore 64 where most of this stuff started peaks and the pokes.
Very early on, this is an Amiga action replay, and it had, it had like a freeze option, a slow-mo option, like all this kind of stuff.
And just this is in general what all these cheat devices do.
Yeah.
They just sniff out memory, and you do what's called peek and poke.
Yeah.
You peek and you look in the memory. You find what you're looking for, and then you poke it with something else, or you bypass it, between wherever's communicating. Sure. So that's just a simplified way of thinking about it.
But it's hackery as hell.
It's hackery as all get out, man.
Yeah.
And you can use it for nefarious, reasons, like deconstructing what was on all these games. Or you could do something like Game Genie, which is what I like. I like the Game Genie because it's basic and it's just...
Yeah, the Game Genie I think is more my speed. This other stuff was I can reverse engineer this entire game.
Yeah, I'm not saying there's not a reason for Action Replay or Game Shark.
No, of course not.
I've found as a gamer, this is just my personal opinion and my personal feeling. The deeper I dive into that kind of thing, like game modifications, game ripping, doing anything where I'm digging into the game itself, I end up turning that into the game and I no longer play the game.
Yeah, I know.
The game is, can I get this full motion video to play on my device that is on this CD? Can I watch it in a way that it wasn't intended? I like to do that sometimes, but... not when I'm specifically trying to play a game.
Yeah, totally. Now, on screen right now, I'm showing the PC version of it. It was in 1994, so notice the 15-pin VGA connector back there.
I love that. It's got looks like a hospital bed remote.
It does. It looks like I got to move my bed up or say my oxygen's low or something. It's weird.
Am I calling the nurse? Nurse!
All that horrible 90s beige bullshit we all thought was great.
Yeah, yeah. I need to cheat at Doom now.
Yeah, I need to beat the boss. Someone come stat. Anyway, right. So there you go.
What happened to these cheating devices, you may be asking yourself? Where'd they all go?
Yeah, Brian, where'd they all go? What happened to them all? I want to know.
8-bit, 16-bit era, and even into the 32-bit era, we were, cheating as best we could. But then came along... leaderboards and achievements and all this other BS.
Online connectivity.
That people love.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So before you were mostly playing single player or you were playing co-op next to somebody who could see you're cheating.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a problem. it's like I'm playing single player. I'm the only one cheating anybody here, cheating myself, like my teacher used to tell me. But also, if you were playing co-op, you kind of were sitting next to the person. You could see them cheating. But then we started moving to the online world where you couldn't see people cheating. And we started tracking, achievements and different things. And that made cheating complicated because then by cheating, you're doing more than just enhancing your game. You're enhancing your placement, in the ecosystem of a game. And so they were... bound to be gone. But we had a whole era where we did aim bots, and that was sort of semi acceptable for a while, and then people got mad about it, and so it's just been a fight ever since then. And so it's just the gaming ecosystem changed.
There's still cheaters, there's still ways of cheating, but it is no longer a retail product you go buy at the game store,
right?
Yeah,
it's kind of like we're policing ourselves almost in some ways, because before it was like, hey, I want to cheat. get out of my house. I'm going to cheat here. Yeah. But now that we're like in this community area, you can't go cheating. Yeah. You know, we got to kind of watch each other.
Yeah. And I, you know, these days I feel like people who have this hackery drive, I think they're just buying like, you know, Raspberry Pis and making some cool shit out of it. Like,
yeah,
it's no longer a thing to be like, I'm going to take a retail product and hack it to pieces. Instead, you're doing other things. You're busy. You got stuff to do. And
right. And we could get really deep into talking about, well, there's still cheatiness. It's kind of evolved. You know, it's like when you can fly around in Minecraft and it's like, yeah. Yeah,
it still exists. That's part of the game, though.
There's still,
but that's not people hacking it. That's just in there as a mode, you know.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a lot of that. There's a lot of debugging. Also, you know, we're also talking about a time back then where you couldn't make your own games or levels to things like you can now. But nowadays, you can make just about anything you want out of almost anything and do it for free. And
there's so much more interesting things to do than cheating.
Yeah, I agree. And even though, you know, when cheating still happens and you hear, oh, Overwatch banned 400,000 people today because of a cheat mod that somebody's been running. So, yes, those things still happen. But I don't know. I feel like it's weird. It's a trolley kind of thing. I feel like people hit a certain age and they go, at least the ones that don't scare me, hit a certain age and then they just stop doing it. You know, because they move on, they mature. They're like, okay, well, I'm done just trying to own noobs in something. I'll spend my time doing something else. But the idea that you could go to a reputable store, walk down an aisle and say, there's a device that will hack and let me cheat. I'm going to buy that device, take it home and use it. It's just a weird thing, man. A weird blip in history.
I'm going to enhance my experience. Now, throughout this research this past week, I went from calling this a cheat device to buying into the marketing because they're not wrong. They never called these cheat devices in marketing. They're called video game enhancers, and they've had several names, but that was the one that Game Genie kind of landed on and the most popular and well-known. But it really is a game enhancement because a lot of times what you're doing is you're adding lives. You can actually modify it so that you have fewer lives. You can make a game more challenging.
Yep.
In addition to making it less challenging, you can also do some things that might be outside of what the original designers thought. Like, you can actually create a handicap. So if you're playing two player and one player is better than the other, there are codes that can hinder one player for certain games over another player. So you're actually looking at really enhancing the game and modifying the game in a way that would be enjoyable. Plus, like I said, after playing Super Mario 64 this last week, to as much as I could play, I appreciate sometimes skipping the stupid parts.
Yeah, well, especially you with your misunderstanding of all things Mario 64. Didn't it accused you of cheating at some point? You were saying, right?
Oh yeah. So as part of that Super Mario 64, it does accuse you of cheating if you accidentally or on purpose, and I did it accidentally on both times. That's not true. I did try to cheat the first time when I raced the turtle.
Oh, I freaking hate that level.
In one of the levels.
Hate that level.
Okay. Because he didn't define that I couldn't use the cannons to get up there.
Yeah,
he just said we were racing. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So I shot myself in the cannon because I knew that was the fastest way to get there. And then he said, you cheated. I'm like, shut up.
Yeah.
And so I did eventually. I just beat him like with foot power.
Yeah, foot power.
Even though he cheated. He ran up a hill I can't run up. Anyway, I'm not mad about that. There was another area where I was racing the penguin down a slide, right? Like the ice slide, the ice race.
Yeah.
And I was doing pretty good, I thought. And I accidentally, I don't even know it was back there. It was a hidden area. I didn't know there was a hidden section in it. And I jumped at the wrong time and I hit. And I went into this hidden tube and I went down and I beat him. And he said, you cheater. And I was like, hey, I didn't cheat on purpose.
Yeah.
I didn't know that happened. What are you so mad about, stupid penguin?
Yeah.
So, you couldn't use the cheat codes and win of those. You actually have to, I think the game maybe, I don't know if the game tracks you, the path that you got to stay within a certain, you know, certain parameters or something. I'm not sure. I bet you there's a Game Genie code that I can cheat that with.
Oh, totally.
We'll see.
Yeah. Stupid the N64, cheats. Well, let's see. Game Genie on N64, or were they gone by then?
No, it was, I think that they had,
Game Shark.
They actually had something really cool. I think it was I don't think it was the Game Shark. I think the Pro Action Replay.
Oh, okay.
Detail. They had one for the N64. And on top of that, they had one, and this is really exciting. They have one that allows you to play Game Boy games on it. You can plug your Game Boy game into it. I'm like, what? On your N64?
What? That's cool.
Get out of here.
Yeah, well, they did that with, well, no, the GameCube had us. Had an adapter to let you play.
They do. Yeah, you got a yeah, you got the GameCube player, which is cool. But that was first party supported by Nintendo. This was like before that. This was thinking by.
Yeah, for sure. It's it's a weird market. I guess my overall on this is, I just it always felt a little like I was breaking some rules or breaking the law somehow. This is why I didn't do it. I never bought one, never had one. I had a friend who had one, other multiple friends that had various versions of this. And I remember like in high school, some kid had a NES version of this. And that one, the reason I didn't want that, I was impressed by what it did, but it looked like it was jammed in there by 15 people and it was never going to come out. And if it did, it would break in half and it looked like a nightmare. So I was like, no, I ain't doing that. Not with
I agree. I still wouldn't recommend it. Like, okay, so I would say that if you're wanting to do this emulation, like let's say I think the safest way to do this is if you have a Sega Genesis and you get the Game Genie for the Genesis, that's just the safest way. It was supported by the system, you know, it had all the approval. It went through the steps. It's the safest way to take care of your nice old stuff.
Yeah.
If you can't do that, then I would say use RetroArch, because I don't know if you've played with this any, Scott, but RetroArch has Game Genie code support in
it. Yeah.
You can you can download the cheats automatically. You just go to a little update the cheats. It comes in there. You load the game up, the ROM, and then you just go to the cheat section. You load up the cheats, and it's even easier than the Game Genie, because you don't have to type in the codes. You just go, you read the description, flip on a switch, and the cheat is activated.
Yep.
It gets complicated from there, because not all cores support cheats. So you got to make sure the core supports it, and then you got to flip on the cheats you want, and you can't always combine certain cheats. Got to kind of play a little bit. You can do a little Google searching on that. But it works pretty good, and it's how I cheated a lot when I was playing the Mario 64. Yeah, the Super Mario 64, I cheated that. But not just because I wanted to cheat and win, but because I found out there was some really cool stuff. Like you can play as Mario.
Yeah, you can be a huge Mario and stuff like that. They had some pretty trippy stuff.
You can be a tiny Mario.
Yeah.
You can run or you can ride around on Peach.
Yeah. Which is really weird. Very weird. Yeah, I don't like that.
You can also play with some of the assets. Like the original assets had a Yoshi model in there.
Oh yeah, that's right.
There was plans on making that a two-player, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, and then they made that we talked about it last week. They made that weird crocodile.
They did the croc. Game.
Yeah, the croc. Yeah,
for the PlayStations.
It was the same dev that was tasked with that got canceled, and then they took it over there.
Yeah,
and it's an okay game. Croc's okay. It's all right.
Right.
You know?
Nope. There was one more. There was one more way that I wanted to mention that you could cheat.
Yeah, go.
I have a Retron 5 Hyperkin. Hyperkin took over the cheating world.
Yeah.
They're cheaters, pumpkin eaters, and this built in. You can throw in your original. Now I had the 5, which allows me to do the NES, SNES, Genesis, Game Boy,
Game Gear,
Color, and Advance. I don't think it does the Game Gear. No, does it do the Game Gear? I don't think so.
I thought it did. Maybe not.
I think it does the Famicom disc is the other one that does.
Gotcha.
But then you can load the cheats there too. Mm. So you can use the little Game Genie cheats built right into the system, so you can use your original ROM carts and do that.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you want to do that? Do that. Cheat all you want. Cheat away.
I'm cheating.
Yeah. Cheetos. Wait, what? I don't know what that means.
Video game enhancer.
There you go. That's our long look at video game enhancement. We hope you enjoyed it. And what are you gonna say?
I was gonna say, and I'm sure I got a few things wrong. This is a lot of content to pack into a week's worth of research. I have a lot of stuff in my head, and I probably nailed it.
I think probably you got didn't. It. Yeah, I feel like we covered most of it. If you're at home and you're like, man, I know everything there is about these things, and you guys missed the fact that there was a Shark Jr. that did a thing or whatever, just send us emails. So
send us emails.
Yeah. It's what is it?
PlayRetroShow@gmail.com. And there was a Game Gear one, right? There was one for the Game Genie, Game Gear.
I think so. Supported. Yeah. I mean, that thing supported a damn TV pack. It better support a cheat pack.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it supported Spider-Man sitting in the bathroom on the toilet.
Yeah, it did. Tobey Maguire, man.
Yeah.
In a very early commercial for the Game Gear.
Mm-hmm.
Worth watching that, by the way. And where he's plugged in, I'll never know where he plugged in. Because
he's got a battery pack. That thing, man, you know, the Game Gear was huge. They said it was portable, but it's
that's questionable. It's as big as a freaking Steam Deck, but without the screen to match it. It's just like a little teeny postage stamp in the middle of a giant battery is what it was. It's really bad. As much as, look, I look back very fondly on that stuff, but that was a real piece of shit. That machine.
Yeah, it was we were growing. That was the teenage years, right? That was like our preteen years, really.
Yeah. Awkward tweens is what that was. But whatever, I owned one, so I can't complain. I definitely put money on that thing, but I also had a Nomad for a hot second.
Oh, I never had a Nomad. I'm a little jealous about that.
Yeah, I liked the Nomad. The Nomad I had the CDX. I was a big Sega guy. Loved all that shit.
Yeah. I was a big Sega guy as well. I've almost reassembled my collection.
Ooh, I need a 32X next. That's what you need now.
That's hard to find.
Yep.
And I want to get one. It's on my list. Yep. It's on my list.
It's so you can have the full stack, the whole, you know.
I got to have the stack. I got to have the CD. I've got to have the 32X. I got to get the dial-in thing.
Imagine it now. Anyone doing this now. It'd never happen.
Yeah.
Never happened. Sony would never go, all right, we're going to stack this on top of here, and then this piece is going to go here, and then, you know, it's insane to me.
I miss our Voltron type consoles where we would just like, you know, form some maximum beast.
Same.
Some sort.
I loved that. It was a time of its own, and it belonged in that time. It would never fly today. It's fantastic.
No.
Love it. All right.
I don't know. We accepted a PS3 with a freaking sliding accordion thing.
That's true. Why did we do that?
I don't know. We accepted that. Surely we can accept.
That was a bad design.
That was
You know
terrible.
What was a good design? The PS2 Slim. Oh, man.
PS2 Slim is tight. That is
bomb. So good.
That is one I never had and I always wanted. And that is on my short list as well. So there you go. So
my PS2, proper PS2, I thought was going to fly apart any minute because it always felt so flimsy. Mm-hmm. But that Slim.
It did.
Oh, man.
Oh,
the
Slim. It was compact. It just felt so solid.
It was so tight. It was like solid state, you know?
Yes.
The whole thing. Oh, I loved it. All right. Here you go. This now.
Destroy it.
It's time for us to... Oh, you know that guy because he says this too.
X-Chicken.
X-Chicken. We are going to do a Guess Our Game. It's where we try to guess each other's games from a long time ago, and we do it with a little bit of audio. My game today is brought to you by the year 1988. And I'm very curious if you know what this is. It's kind of obscure, but I played it. So that's my rule. I have to have played it myself before I'll subject Brian to it.
Okay. So that's an interesting rule because the game I played this week, I have played, but I didn't play in its original form. Oh. I emulated it a few years back. So
that still counts. It's fine.
Okay.
Totally counts. All right. Here's mine. 88, at least in Japan, came out in the U.S. the following year. All right. Oh, and Europe didn't get it till like 94 for some reason.
Oh, Europe. Come on. They probably changed the name of it, too.
Well, that might help you. I'm not sure. But here you go.
Okay. Oh, I like this.
Yeah, this slaps. NES, I should say. That's some pretty advanced sound. Here we go. Here's some of the... Any guesses?
Uh-uh.
I'll give you another hint. This is a side-scrolling game in its format, and it is made by Konami. But it's also a game we have not...
What year was it again?
88. We've talked a lot about the Konami in recent months, but we have never talked about this game on the show. And the other hint is, it kind of makes fun of where you're from.
Is it Redneck Rampage?
No, but you're, you know, that's the vein. Any guesses?
Oh, no.
It's hard. I admit this one's hard.
I don't know that one.
I'll give you a sound of
it. That doesn't even sound familiar in like in my walking in and out of arcade mind or anything.
Well,
no.
here's the sound of the character dying. Maybe that'll help. Does that sound like anything?
No. What is that?
All right. I'll
what was that?
I'll give it away because the game actually says it. I just cut it out of my edit. So here's the voice, which is impressive for 88. Like, nobody was making games like this at home. So, anyway, here's the VO.
The Adventures of Bayou Billy.
The Adventures of Bayou Billy.
Bayou Billy, yes!
Yeah, Bayou Billy. Yes, he was was a Southern bumpkin kind of deal, and you had to go get your girl back, who I think is naked in the cut screen scene. They don't say, but she looked naked. Anyway, you had to go save her, and it was kind of a side-scrolling beat-em-up, but very, very not... Like in
I
at
never
the time,
played
fine.
That either. That's
at the time it was fine. Play it now. Ooh, the fighting's rough, dude. It's rough.
Ooh,
especially in light of like all those beat 'em ups we talked about. This thing is not one of those, despite it being Konami. Anyway, I don't know if you played it. It doesn't sound like you did, but I played it and at the time thought it was cool. I'm not so sure now. I think it probably doesn't hold up. But
I prefer Redneck Rampage.
Yeah, you like that? That's a good one.
Yeah.
They should do a it's a shooter, wasn't it? Was that a shooter? What was that?
Yeah, yeah.
First-person shooter.
Shooter, for the most part. Yeah.
Kind of like a crappy...
I mean, when you weren't, like, grabbing the chickens. Whatever. Yeah, or drinking beer.
I wonder if they'll ever they got a new Postal game. Why not make a new Redneck Rampage? Why not?
That was a great game.
That Postal 4 game is getting torn to shreds in the reviews.
Really?
Two out of 10? It's bad. Worst reviewed game of the year. All right. Well, this guy will die. And now I'll play Brian's. This is from 85. Anything else you want to tell me?
1985. Now, originally this released just in Japan, but it eventually made it to the U.S. I'll accept either title. They had two different titles. They're kind of similar, so I'll accept either one.
Okay.
So, yes.
All right. Let's see what we got.
This is an arcade game, too.
Arcade game.
Hi, how are all you guys out there? Yeah, this is Radio DATA with the hot. Bright and sunny out there. Are you all having fun? You all know about the gangs busting up the city. Geez, I wish someone...
This has a lot of VO in an 85 game.
Yeah,
you've all seen that red supercar running around. Yeah,
arcade.
That's the one. He's our man. Yeah, he's blasting them sky high. Hey, the red supercar. Can you hear me out there? The gangs are running wild again. Hurry, man. We need you. We need you fast.
Terrible. let's see. It gets to a part here. Hold on. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, there's more. Hold on.
Is there more?
Let's see.
That.
And then it cuts off.
Yeah. I figured the attract mode would be the most likely way of people to recognize this, because after that, the game gets a little different. I will give you another hint if you like one.
Yes, please.
This was a LaserDisc game, so that's the reason why.
Oh, I know this game. So it's an anime one. It's I know this game. Oh, Scott. It was okay. So you were either a Dragon's Lair guy or you were this game. These were the two fighting things. Everybody was like, "Oh, if you played either of the quick time, real time animated hoo ha's," and I'd say, "Which ones do you mean?" And they'd say Dragon's Lair or this.
Yeah, they'd say the night guy or the racy game.
Oh my gosh, no. Chat saying Space Race. That is absolutely not it.
Space Ace,
you mean. Yeah, Space Ace was a follow-up to Dragon's Lair. It was the same
right,
people.
Right,
I also really liked that game. But
And you might not have played this. If you didn't see it at your arcade, you might not have seen this. And I think I've seen an arcade later in the cycle, so I don't think I ever saw it. Originally, it did make it to the Sega CD.
Yeah, Sega CD ended up getting that. So did...
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, someone just stopped by with something.
And the PlayStation.
Yeah, PlayStation had it. I want to say you could get it on some DVD players or something.
Yeah, Sega Saturn as well.
Damn it. What was that called? I'm going to be annoyed because it was my friend Mark. Mark Larson and I used to have these arguments. And I was like, oh, no, man, everything. It's all about the Dragon's Lair. No way, man. It's about this other thing. And I can't remember the name.
I gave you the first. There's three different. There's actually four different titles this thing, and they all start with one word. How about I give you the first word?
All right.
Road.
Road.
Yeah.
Rash.
Road.
Runners.
Road rash, not it.
Road running rash runners. Road kill killers.
Road kill.
Give me another
hint. You're forgiven for forgetting this forgettable name.
Okay, what is
it? Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Road Blaster was the original Japanese name.
Shit.
But you may have heard it as Road Blaster FX or Road Avenger or Road Prosecutor.
I only remember Road the first one.
Right. Exactly.
I've already forgotten
Yeah.
Yeah, those, it was good. It was, you know, I wasn't a huge anime person back then, and so I think that's why I was maybe put off on it. I liked the more, I don't know, Disney-ified look of something like Dragon's Lair. Yeah. But
did you ever watch the cool. Pole Position cartoon from the 80s?
No, was that?
Had very similar animation. It might have even been the same studio.
Really? Hold on.
Yeah, this is Data East, by the way.
Yeah, we used to work with those guys. The whole series is on freaking YouTube, dude.
Oh, yeah, you've never seen the Pole Position series? No. It's freaking terrible.
Let me hear this intro.
Prepare for excitement with the Pole Position team. Today's adventure, The Cove.
What?
Which button do I press?
Press them all!
Press you them all!
5 seconds. From now on, like your parents were, you are the secret force of Pole Position.
It's so bad.
Yeah, these kids lost their parents. This is so good, though. It really is. Toei Animation is how I say it. It could be Toei Animation. And so they've done tons of stuff you've probably seen before. But yeah, I loved this particular type of anime. It did not bother me. I wouldn't even really call it anime. It's more like just...
Yeah, it's just animated, hand drawn.
Yeah,
yeah. It's not. I mean, it definitely had that style of like big eye, kind of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't at the time a fan of. I've grown in appreciation over the years, but so there you go. That's Road Blaster.
Road Blaster.
And my game was, I don't remember now. What did I play for y'all?
Yeah. Well, it took me
The Adventures of Bayou Billy, right here.
The Adventures of Bayou Billy.
Bayou Billy. We don't know how to make computer voices yet, so it sounds weird.
All right. It is time for emails, though.
Welcome to the Treasure Room.
Poutine. For some reason, I always think poutine with that. Jeff Smith in Danville, Pennsylvania wrote in. He says he's not the bone Jeff Smith. Okay. So
not that guy. Okay.
No. Whose series just got canceled by Netflix. They're not doing it now.
Oh no.
They're not doing a bone series. I know. I was pissed. I
didn't know that.
Yeah. I love the bone books. The bone books are some of my favorites.
Yeah. Very good.
But Netflix is doing a weird like shedding right now. They're like canceling shit left and right. Anyway, dear Scott and Brian, I too am a fan of Discs of Tron. I have this on my wish list, but I wanted to see if you were aware of it. Arcade 1-Up has a Tron/Discs of Tron cabinet. It even has the glowy, translucent flat stick. Here's the link. Yeah, look at that link.
Let me take a look.
So we saw this on, I think, Core or somewhere. Maybe TMS.
I don't think I've seen this
Brian
one.
Wanted this, but yeah, look at that thing. It's all glowy and blue. Here, chat.
Want this. Do I have to wear the Tron Man suit? Do I have to wear
Nope. You don't have to be Tron Man.
Tron
Although,
guy?
Keep in mind, this is the shorty cabinet. And you have to have the riser if you wanted to sit up. It's a little pricey, $700.
Would somebody explain to me why you need why a riser?
Well, because they make them small, man. They're a little tiny. I have one. I have the Joust one. It's a little tiny machine.
But when you sit down, are you at the right height without the riser?
Yes. If you sit in a chair, you're fine. Totally fine. And then
that's lame. No one plays the arcade game in a chair. What's wrong with you people?
Well, if you have a cocktail one, you do, but you're right.
Well, yeah. Cocktail's different. Yeah.
But we had a lot of stools in our arcade growing up. People would sit on stools and stuff. I don't know.
Just give me the freaking riser. It's like four little pieces of wood. Just give it to me, man.
And you know what they do? They charge you $200 for that. So
I know.
It's a jip.
That's dumb.
I don't like it. No, sir. I don't. Well, Jeff from Danville. Sorry, all the Dans are in Danville. Thanks for the reminder, and that thing is cool. You can also buy the printed stool version of this thing, but I'm sure that's another $200. So,
yeah. By the time you're almost at a regular arcade, that's fine. It's not even prosumer. It's just consumer.
It's just consumer. Right? Well done. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
This is an actual Dan wrote in. says, so you mentioned Wolverine's geographically misplaced Australian accent in one of the old arcade games. Or maybe just the pride of the X-Men cartoon, which was the artistic basis for the six-player arcade game. The creator slash casting directors may have simply followed the example set by the early 80s Spider-Man in his Amazing Friends cartoon. There were a couple of episodes that starred the X-Men and Wolverine. In that, he had an Australian accent in those as well. How could a cartoon that had Frank Welker as Iceman and June Foray, Looney Tunes Sylvester and Tweety Grandma as Aunt Mary, May, I think she means May, Aunt May get it so wrong, at least in the 90s version, hit the bullseye.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Yeah, the 90s version nailed it.
That's a weird-ass time. None of the comic shit worked the way it was supposed to back then. It was all effed up.
Right, right. Yeah. But yeah, I kind of I want to go back and watch those episodes to see to listen to Wolverine doing his Australian accent. I think they kind of, you know, this is where's the truth lie?
Yeah, somewhere in the middle.
In the minds of people, because I've read they also said that it's because he calls somebody a dingo or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a Wolverine ate your dingo or something. I forget. There was something in the script is what they attributed it to, but that could also be wrong. So
yeah,
your explanation is probably as good as anybody else's. Maybe better, Dan.
Maybe better. Hey, if you want to be like Dan, and the other guy kept calling Dan, whose name is really Jeff, you can send us emails as well. Please do. It's playretroshow@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We also would love for you to support our Patreon at patreon.com/playretro. It's super easy to follow and get there. patreon.com/playretro. If you'd like to see the show continue, that's how you do it. Throw us a buck, and we'll be your friends for life. patreon.com/playretro. We are Play Retro Show on Twitter. And you can find us at frogpants.com/playretro. Brian, next week, we are talking. I mean, you did a nice little lead in here with your pick this week for Mystery Game. We are going full motion video from Dragon's Lair to Night Trap.
Ooh, full motion video games I could hardly ever play back in the day, but so excited to give a turn.
You got to give Dragon's Lair credit for being that machine when you walked in the arcade and you were like, 50 cents. What the frick is this?
Dude, we had ours was the skate rink. So, I would go there and it was always, I think it was close to like a dollar. Maybe it was 50 cents, but it felt like a dollar. And I was like, can't afford to play this. And I'd never make it very far because, you know, it wasn't like regular quick action games where it's like, you do, you know, like when you play console games or arcade games, everything's very responsive. Here it was more like, okay, here comes an event.
Yep.
Make a move.
Yep.
Here comes an event. Make a move. And I would just fail every time. Never made it more than like 2 minutes in those games.
I finally beat, we'll talk about next week, but I beat Dragon's Lair in the arcade. And that was a huge achievement for me. What's embarrassing is I've tried since then at home on other devices and I can't get it. I can't finish it.
Right.
Because I forget too much, but I had it all memorized. I mean, that's really what it came down to. And the idea of quick action events, which are still prominent in video games today, I just played one with a bunch of quick action events that it's brand new game in 2022. So where did those come from? A lot of them came from these games. So we'll talk about all that stuff and way more next week right here on Play Retro. Brian, is there anything else you'd like to tell these people before we go?
Sure, I play these video games every night of the week, just about at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Tomorrow night, I'll be playing indie, though, Graveyard Keeper, but then back to the retro stuff. Check it out.
Yeah. Also, there was a cool retro-like Twitch.tv. game I wanted to recommend for people. Well, is it Viking Story? Shit.
Oh.
I played this game. It's very retro. It's a roguelike, but it's like, I don't know, it feels old. And you can get it on anything. I have it on Xbox. It was on sale for like $3 or something. What a delightful, fun little game. Really, really
don't
great.
Don't forget to get your... Yeah, don't forget to pick up your... if you're wanting those single versions of Sega Sonic, because on Steam, they're about to stop selling some of those. So you may want to...
Yeah.
If you want to get that on that platform.
Hey, I also played a bunch of Pac-Man Championship Edition 2. Do you know when that new museum thing's coming out? When's that?
Didn't it come out this month? Like later this month, I'm thinking.
I don't know. I know it's soon. It's in the next month or two.
Very soon. I'm very excited about it, and we're going to have a show about it.
Yeah, we're going to go full Pac-Man when that comes out, so watch for that. All right, that's going to do it. Thank you all for listening and being here. We'll be back next week with more.
May 27th.
Yep. Oh, good. Until then, go play retro. We'll see you then.
show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Game over?
No way!
Yeah.
No way!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.